we start out with a live donor, and brand new program. Mark was the first one that was had people sign in up to be a live donor. We crashed the system. We put it on our Approach for Freebie page, and they had over 1,000 people in a short span sign up to see if they were a match for Mark.
Hey guys, check out the 2023 Street Cop Conference, April 23rd through the 28th, Gaylord Convention Center. It's going to be the event of the year. Keynote speakers include Rob O'Neill, the guy who killed Bin Laden, Kyle Carpenter, the youngest living Medal of Honor recipient, Navy SEAL Jason Redman, Fox News host Tommy Lahren, Marine Corps Special Forces and Leadership Coach Cody Alford, Sheriff Wayne Ivey, Sheriff David Clark, and Sheriff Mark Lamb. It's going to be one hell of an event. And on top of that, we have all of our instructors and additional instructors from other companies going to be at the event, giving you everything they know for you to have a successful career and get the results you want to get in the field as a police officer. On top of attending the event, you'll get face-to-face time with every instructor attending the event, and all the keynote speakers will spend time with you. We got special events all week, giveaways, nightlife. It's going to be really, really worth your time, energy, and effort. I promise you, you will not regret it for a second. To register for the conference, check out streetcop.com, click conference, and everything you need will be there on the homepage. If you are looking for a room, just click book a room. The block has been sold out at the Gaylord Opryland Convention Center, but there are many hotels nearby within a walking distance of the event. You don't want to miss out on this opportunity. We will see you there.
111, 110. You trying to be a street cop?
Hey guys, welcome to this episode of the Street Cop Training Podcast. I'm your host, founder and CEO of Street Cop Training. My name is Dennis Panino. I have with us today Heather and Connor Priebe. Got that shit right.
You got it right.
It's spelled P-R-I-E-B-E, but yeah, it's I've practiced a little bit. Some of these names are tough on here sometimes, but they're family members of a police officer who was significantly injured in the line of duty. Real crazy story, but I'll let Heather tell that version, what they've been through, and they really want to come on here today and express their thankfulness for support from the nation for people who continue to back the blue, and also how stuff like police work or a significant incident affects your children. It's going to be a good episode because you're going to hear from a kid whose father was significantly injured. I'm sure that he went through a lot of emotion. I say kid, he's 18 now. He grew a beard out. He looks like he's on the starting line for the San Francisco 49ers. But outside of that, going to be a good episode. Hope you guys enjoy it. And I appreciate you guys being here. Heather, why don't you give us a little bit of context of how you ended up on this podcast today?
So June 9th, 2020, Mark was intentionally run over in front of police headquarters by
In Springfield, Missouri,
by a young man that felt like the cops were out to get him. And that particular day, he had even texted a friend and said, "I think I'm going to run over a cop today." And he did just that. He didn't set out to kill a cop, but he set out to run over one. And unfortunately, Mark was the victim in this situation. He was left paralyzed from the waist down, therefore wheelchair, no chance of ever walking again.
So Mark is at work. Walk me through that a little bit, because there's a little bit more to the detail of the story. He was pinned. There's a lot there, right?
Yeah, so he, the week before, they had worked peaceful protest. That was kind of on the skirt tails of the George Floyd stuff. And so they had some protests going on in Springfield that he was in charge of, the ops plans for that. So it had been a pretty stressful week, you know, leading up to his incident. And that Monday, he had taken off, spent the day with our daughter. Tuesday, got up, went to work, sat with his sergeant and told him, "I think I'm going to do an early retirement. I'm done. This is just not what it used to be." Then they got notification that they had a suspect that was out driving around the parking lot, had created a disturbance by going up to the front door and urinating on the front door. That was his way of trying to get an officer to come out. Of course, by the time they got a notification, they come out, he had already left, but he continued to circle through. They got information that he was coming back around. Mark and his sergeant, or one of the other sergeants, stepped outside as the suspect was pulling into the driveway. There in front of police headquarters is the health department and, of course, headquarters. And it's just a small driveway that kind of leads around through the campus. And when he pulled in, Mark was pointing him to pull across to park, you know, so they could talk with him. And he turned his wheel, gassed the vehicle. Mark wasn't able to get out of the way, struck him, knocked him underneath the vehicle. The sergeant that was there with him, she fired a couple of shots and was able to stop, you know, his acceleration of the vehicle. It did hit a concrete post out front, but Mark was pinned under the vehicle. His legs were up on his chest. By then, they had other officers arrive, and, you know, those within the headquarters had been alerted that the situation had shots fired, officer down. And it just kind of went from there.
How did you get notified of this?
That's kind of another crazy situation here. So, you know, when you're in this line and you're an LEOY for spouse, you know, our family has always prepared for the worst, hope for the best. I worked EMS for 6 years. That's how Mark and I met. I grew up with, my dad was a prosecutor and I used to go on calls with him. So these situations were familiar to me, but given today's world and social media, those things go breaking before families are being notified. So thus in our situation, it broke out on our local news station, officer down, shots fired. I was at work. I have a spa in Republic that I work at, and came out of with a client, and I had multiple messages asking if Mark was at work, if he was okay. I saw the breaking news and my heart told me it was him.
Why do you think that happened? Why do you think you knew?
Because we on Sunday had one of the biggest fights we'd ever had in our 20-year marriage. And I've talked about this before. I thought he shot himself. I honestly thought that he had shot himself at headquarters. And that's, you know, suicide in this profession is very common. And with everything that happened last week and things that were going on within our marriage, I just kind of had my heart that that had happened. I pulled him up on Life 360, which is an app where you can track each other. And it showed that they were on National just outside of Mercy Hospital. And I saw where they turned into Mercy Hospital. So I knew that he was obviously either following or he was in the ambulance, which just even more told my heart that it was him. I tried to call him. He wasn't responding. I tried texting him. He didn't respond. Again, I probably ended up with like 15 to 20 text messages, phone calls, asking if he was okay. And I didn't know. The next call I did get was from another wife that said he had been shot and wanted to know what she could do. I said, somebody has to come get me. I can't drive. Springfield's only about a 15-minute, 20-minute drive from our home to the hospital. So it's close, but I just didn't feel comfortable. It was summertime. The kids were at home, you know.
Football.
Yeah, Connor was just finishing up at football. You know, who's going to sit with my kids? You know, your mind just goes in 1,000 different directions. So,
luckily we were right behind her, when she was headed home to the house. And so I was with my buddy's dad, cause I was 15 at the time, so I couldn't drive. And so he was able to kind of help us. And, he was in law enforcement. So he kind of knew steps of what to do. I don't know if he's ever really been through those steps, until that day, but he was here to kind of calm my mom down, talk to her,
make
phone calls of who can get her to the hospital. He was able to stay with me, and my sister was at the house, until my grandma could get there. And so she could kind of get to the hospital and not have to worry about us kids. So luckily he was there with us. Because luckily, like, you know, we said it was a God thing. My grandma was in town that day. They live about 30 minutes away, and she was in town that day and coming by. So we were luckily, you know, she was closer than what she normally would have been to get here. So she was here within a couple minutes
too. And, you know, in the normal situation of things, a lot of these incidents tend to happen at night. You know, families are notified by, sergeant or, you know, whoever is sent from their PD that they're at, you know, to do notification with the family. But this was 9:30 in the morning on a weekday. It was a Tuesday. So things were a little bit different. Everybody was at work. Everybody that was at police headquarters, Mark Sargent and other staff members, they were tending to Mark in the situation. So I was never upset or angry or mad that my notifications were coming in other ways. I was a little caught off guard by social media, but that's life today. But
well, and social media had it wrong. It said officer shot, but it, you know, it was shots fired, officer down. So that at first, you know, I was in like the back of my friend's truck when we were headed home, and his wife had sent his dad a screenshot of like the news thing. And so I had saw it. And so, you know, when you see it, officer shot, you're like, oh crap. And so like for me, you know, I saw it and was just thinking like, all right, you know, something's going on. He saw my face. And so he saw it. He knew I saw it. And he had asked if I tried calling my dad. I said no. So I tried calling him and he didn't answer. And so, you know, my mom said, I looked on my 360. It showed him. I was like, all right, you know, he probably didn't answer. You know, they got to get the scene, you know, sealed off and do whatever they have to do. So he's just busy. You know, he'll call later. And that's when we had eventually met up with my mom. She was hauling butt to the house. That's kind of more when I knew something was up. And so kind of led us to where I'd stayed in the car and he'd talk to her and got the ride she needed to get to the hospital and everything. So
you're 15 and you hear that officer may be shot. Your mother's racing home. When did it really dawn on you that like, oh shit, this is my dad? What were you thinking at that time? What were the feelings like?
You know, there was just so much not known yet. So, you know, like I didn't, you know, like I said, you know, the news said officer shot. But it was just that hope, like, all right, you know, he could have been shot anywhere. Like, you know, I know he'd fight. Like, it's one of those moments you kind of stop and just pray. Like, all right, you know, everything's going to be okay. Like, this is just the ground of it. Like, there's so much more that we don't know, like, you know, and they ended up being wrong on the news, luckily, which, you know, so you're kind of, you hope for the best. So, you know, you're trying to think positive or, all right, you know, like he could have been shot in the leg or, you know, he could have been shot at, you know, there, or he was shooting. Like there's so much that you kind of, your mind runs through everything, every different option, all the what ifs. And so you kind of just have to like stop yourself and breathe and try to relax. But all right, I need to wait until I know for sure I'm having good, you know, I'm getting the truth and that I can, you know, just kind of like, I'm like, all right, we're falling behind her. Like, I'm going to know what's going to happen here in the next 2 minutes. Like, you know, I'm trying not to worry about it. Honestly, I think we're driving because it was like 5 minutes until we met up with her at the spa when she was leaving. I was just trying to like, all right, it's not him. You know, he's just helping other people. There's something, you know, I'm like, he's working, he's a desk job. Like, it was at headquarters. That's where he's at. You know, like, he was just helping the situation. That's why he can't answer his call. Like, you know, I don't know what all had happened, but he's just helping out. Like, I'll get a call here in a couple of minutes. We'll be fine.
Well, and I want to touch base on that. Mark's incident happened just a couple of months after we had had a officer killed in the line of duty in Springfield. So that was in March. This was June. We hadn't had an officer killed in the line of duty in Springfield in, you know, 60 years.
Was so, that was that Josiah Overton's?
Yes, his situation.
Yeah.
So Walsh was killed. Overton had been injured, and so it was all kind of fresh in our minds and fresh, you know, in the situation that we had just had this happen just a few months prior, and you know, throughout the PD, you know, the guys and the families and police officers were still kind of on edge and shaken up by the whole situation and still trying to navigate through this. And of course, it opened up more conversations for us as a family to discuss it with our kids and the risk that this could happen. But Mark worked at the desk job. He was in his last 3 years of, five years of his time with the police department. He worked the desk job. I didn't worry about him. You know, he went into work in a soft uniform and did his thing and came home every day. I never dreamed that we'd be sitting in this situation today.
You kind of figured like you were out of the weeds when it came to having to worry about your husband.
Exactly.
And oddly enough, this strange turn of events happens. It's pretty wild.
Right. I had been doing a Bible study, book study with some of the wives from Overton and Walsh's squad. You know, it's COVID, so we had all been home. And one of the wives had reached out and asked if I wanted to join. They live here close to us. And I was like, sure, you know. And they were all young. I'm the oldest wife in the group. And, you know, listening to them talk about how, oh, in the mornings or at night when before they go to work, they'd fix their dinner and they'd give them a kiss goodbye and they'd pray with them and they
make their lunch
and couldn't wait till they came home and took off their vest and you hear the Velcro. And I'm like, oh, ladies, give it another 15 years. You'll be like, get dressed at work, get under, you know, don't bring that stuff home. I'm not fixing your lunch today. And, you know, you kiss them goodbye, tell them you love them, but it wasn't a scene. It wasn't a big deal. You know, as I've always said over that time of his career, he was living in our worlds instead of us living in his world. And, you know, because of shift work and the crazy hours, we had adapted, or we had him adapt to us instead of us adapting to him. Mm. And so at that point, yeah, I remember just that Sunday before telling him that he works a desk job. I just don't even think two cents of it. You know, he goes to work, comes home, and he's at a desk.
Hmm. What were you thinking about as you're heading to the hospital? And we'll just skip ahead to like you're en route to the hospital. Did that fight you guys had prior really start to weigh heavy on you on the way to the hospital?
It did. The officer that picked me up, he was the former Springfield officer that had retired. And he is our school resource officer director. And he had actually was headed to go pick up Connor at football and make contact with him. And when the friend that was bringing Connor home reached out to Scott and said, hey, you know, I've got Connor with me. Can you come take Heather? So I remember telling Scott the situation about the fight and, you know, how I was just done. I'd left Mark sitting out in the garage and told him, you know, if I never talked to him again, that was how it was going to be. So inbound to the hospital, you go back and play those words in your head. The words that I said to him, the words that he said to me, poor to mine, were by far more hurtful than the things he said to me. But regret that I had that struggle that day and felt that way. But I also knew going into it, walking into that hospital, that he was still my husband. I still loved him. He was still, you know, the father to our kids and that we weren't alone.
What would you say to somebody knowing that you were set up with a situation that, you know, it's crazy. We're always told, especially as adults, if you fight, make up at the end of it. Don't go to bed angry. A lot of those things. And you just think it's never going to happen to you. You know, I take it very seriously. I really think about it a lot. I don't want to have regrets. So what would you say to somebody about even what you went through and feeling that way? How could you, what would you say if you were in a fight with somebody and you are a spouse of a law enforcement officer? You know, what's something you would be able to offer?
There's nothing that you can't get through. You know, it may lead to separation, it may lead to divorce, but there is nothing that we cannot get through. And I say that meaning there's help in all ways, shape, and form. There's support out there. And sometimes, in, you know, especially this line of work, you have to suck it up and know that it's okay to seek help and it's okay to get therapy, whatever the case may be, and go back to the root of the problem. But that's something that, again, we didn't ever talk about or didn't face, you know, it didn't have the information on that we have today. You know, the last 2 years has brought us so much information and so many opportunities and support. You know, we've been doing peer support training like crazy the last, especially last 6 months, because it is important to share with these officers and their families the need to remind each other that you do love each other and to know that there is help available.
People are going to get in fights, are going to have arguments, but at the end of it, do you think it's a wise idea to say, hey, we had a disagreement today, but I want you to know that I love you.
And yes,
just in case something happens to you.
Yep. Yep. Because that regret is strong.
And at least you got a chance to say it to them that, I guess I'm later on that you guys discussed the fight prior, obviously maybe not at that moment, but at least you got the opportunity to say to them,
exactly,
you know, to Mark, hey, I'm sorry about that. I don't think we should ever do that again because of things like this.
So when I got to the hospital that day, again, because it's summertime and others were finding out about it, the ambulance bay where everything was full of officers and spouses, and got inside and the whole hallway was lined with them. And they took me to his room. It was like right within the ER doors. I just remember a whole bunch of people standing there, and the chief came over and grabbed my hand and he said, I'm going to take you around to this other side and let you replace Boomgarner, which he's got to be like 7 foot tall. He's
a big guy.
He is really tall. And to see him holding Mark's hand was, you just kind of had the giggle inside. It's like a big old teddy bear. And so the chief took me around to Mark's right side. And so Boom stepped back and kind of held my shoulder. And I grabbed Mark's hand. And the first thing he said was, I'm sorry. And I'm sorry. He said it 3 times. And I said, what are you sorry for? And he said, I can't feel my legs. And at the exact same time he said that, the doctor tapped me on the shoulder. And I turned and she said, he has a spinal cord injury and he's likely never going to walk again. And I turned back to him and I said, we can do it. We can get through this. He looked totally fine. You know, he didn't have any head injury or
his hair was a little messed up, which probably would have made him mad.
Yeah. But no head injury, no trauma that you could see to his face. Again, to know that he was underneath the vehicle, you just expected so much more, but he looked fine. So
even though he couldn't walk, did you have a sense of relief at that time of like, oh, he's alive, he's talking, you know, he's not shot up, he's not in ICU, he doesn't have a tube down his throat.
Right.
How much relief did you feel because of that?
Well, and again, because of my prior history of EMS, I just knew that that was a positive when I saw that he wasn't intubated, that he was alert oriented. He recognized me. He was able to talk to me, communicate with me. Yeah. Huge, huge sense of relief. Well,
and one of the big things we have always said since that day is, you know, like he's still my dad. He still has the same mind. Like everything's still the same. He just can't walk. No, he may have lost his walking, but I lose my dad. I didn't lose, you know, a catching partner. Like, everything's still the same. It's just we're going to have to adapt to how we do things or where we go because he can't walk now. So, you know, that was ever since that day, we've always been trying to find the positives. And so that was a big positive is like, you know, while some things are going to look different, I still have my dad. You know, like I remember my sister's first question was, what about the father-daughter dance that was coming up? That was her first thought, you know, like they're still able to go to the father-daughter dance. It's just him going to be, he's going to be in a wheelchair. And so that was the way is like, you know, we still have our dad. We still have these memories that can be made. It's just going to look a little bit different. And so that, I think that was a big help with us was even to this day, we still try to find the positives out of everything and like look at the bright side. Like there's so much more out of it than all the bad stuff.
Well, in that moment in the ER, after him and I had that conversation, they were ready to move him to ICU. And so they were like, you know, we're gonna go ahead and take him upstairs. And I'm like, whoa, I have to go pee. I need to go pee before we go any further here. So they guide me to the bathroom, and I just kind of got in there and took a minute, took a deep breath, and was like, I do not have to go out here and tell my kids their dad is dead. I have to tell him that he'll never walk again. But I don't have to tell him that he's dead. And that sigh, that moment that I took in that restroom, gave me the strength and the peace and put my attitude in its place and to forgive what happened on Sunday and how things have been going. And I came back out and here we go. Got upstairs. My mom and the kids got there. And so I went, we were in this little tiny room at the hospital, little tiny.
It was, you could feel each other breathing on each other's necks.
And of course it's June, so it's hot. And
no windows.
Yeah. And so I just had to go in there and sit down with my mom and the kids. And
it was our whole family. So grandparents, both sets of grandparents, my uncle that lives here, one of them's in Idaho. So like his family. So, I mean, there was 10 plus people in there.
And I just sat down and looked at the kids and told them that dad got ran over and he had a spinal cord injury and he would never walk again. And Connor didn't say anything. And Chloe looked at me and she said, what about the father-daughter dance? And I said, Chloe, you're going to have this coolest dad on the dance floor because he's going to be doing wheels around the dance floor. And she was 9. I don't think she totally understand what all it meant. And I assured him that he looked good. You know, from the front side, he looked fine. He didn't have any injuries that you could see, but that we had a new life ahead and we were going to get through it. And then I asked if they wanted to go see him. Connor did. Chloe didn't. She didn't go. She didn't even see him in the hospital for like 3 or 4 days. She just wasn't sure about what it was going to all be. But Connor did go back and see him.
And what did you think, Connor, as you were like brought back to that room to see your father?
Tell me about that. Well, so like first when she told me, like when we were in the room, I just like remember like my fists were tight and like, I mean, it was almost every emotion you could feel. You're angry, pissed off. You're like, all right, where is this dude? Let's go kill him. Like, you know, like it's just a rush of emotion. Like sad, mad, frustrated, like why us, you know, like all the what ifs. And so like, I just kind of, you know, holding back tears, like, you know, I was just passing. I was like, ready. Let's like, let's just go tear this dude apart. Let's go drive him off a cliff, like whatever. And so when she said we could go back there and see him, like, all right, I got to see him, like kind of like assess the situation for myself. And so, you know, get back there. He's pretty heavily sedated. So he's, you know, sleepy. So I went in there, held his hand and he woke up. And he wasn't, you know, he was still out of it. So we didn't talk very much. She said, I loved him and hugged him. You know, like she said, you know, there's nothing, you know, he looked like he was just laying in bed. You know, there was nothing on his face or anything. And I think for me, that was like, all right, he's still alive. You know, he's still my dad. And so, you know, it's best case scenario for the worst, you know, for the card we've been dealt, you know. So it's kind of like the reassurance, like, all right, you know, this is just the first step of many that we're going to take over the next, you know, weeks, days, months. So I think seeing him kind of helped me, like, all right, I could kind of like breathe. I feel like the weight was lifted off my shoulders. Like I knew he was going to be okay. You know, obviously there's a whole new life he was going to have to learn, but it was kind of like a clean slate. Like, all right, he's good. You know, he's in good care. Like, we can focus on what we need to focus now. you know, I guess my spirits were a little bit, you know, the anger was still there, but it wasn't like my forefront. I'm like, that's not what I was focused on. I was more focused on, all right, you know, I have a 9-year-old sister, like, she's going to have a ton of questions and trying to make her, you know, feel, because she didn't want to go back there. I'm like, she just couldn't. So I was trying to keep her mind almost off of it and make her feel as comfortable as she, you know, could in the situation.
Connor, what's your relationship with your father prior to this? You guys, like, tell me about, describe that to me.
It wasn't very good towards the end. It was where we wanted him to be at work instead of being at home, just because he'd come home from work and he was just a dick. You know, he'd walk in, he's like, oh, take this out. Like, it was just like a list of stuff. And so it was just kind of like, you know, everything was fine until he came home. And so, I mean, we still had a good relationship. It was just, you would want to lock yourself in your room kind of thing. Like, it was just easier to go around and do what we needed to do when he wasn't here, because he'd immediately come in and start barking orders like, oh, take out the trash. Why isn't this done?
Why are those shoes there? Yeah. Why isn't this?
And it was just always, he always found the little stuff, and
it was never, hey, how's your day?
Yeah, it was straight to like, let's do this, and this. It's like, you just got home. Like,
how has your relationship with your father changed now?
We're definitely a lot closer. You know, I'm his chauffeur, I like to say. I drive him around, and, you know, we go do stuff.
Has his attitude changed?
Yeah, he's definitely become more relaxed with stuff and not so anal about things. You know, he's still like, all right, let's make sure we're keeping up on stuff. But for us, it was our second. And then, you know, when he had to get his new kidney, it was our third chance. And so it's a whole new mindset of like, you know, any day could be our last. So let's enjoy it and make the best out of it. And so I think, you know, it brought us closer as a family and our connections closer. And so, you know, you don't want to miss the opportunities that you do have. And so any opportunity that we've had to do stuff, you know, we try to do it.
Heather, have you seen the change as well? Have you seen him change after his incident?
For sure. So, you know, we called it his second chance. This was his second chance at life, his second chance with his family. And he could either go forward in a positive way or he could stay behind, but we were going to continue on without him. And we were at Mercy for 10 days, and then we flew out to Craig Hospital in Inglewood, Colorado for rehab. And that was a 3-month stint. And it was out there that we were had a psychologist that was assigned to the situation and to him. Of course, anytime you have a life-changing situation and, you know, with the facility they have, which is amazing, they connect you with, you know, support like that. And I remember we probably been there 3 days maybe, and I touched on his OCD and just, you know, how he was with the way that the clothes hang in his closet, the way his uniform was, the way he put things in his drawers, and how
he cleaned, like,
yeah, just me coming out there with him, that I knew I wasn't going to bring the right clothes, or that this outfit wasn't going to match. You know, he's in a hospital. It wasn't about look. It was going to be about learning his new life. And so immediately she touched on those things and helped guide him and give him exercises to learn to back away from his OCD on different levels. So with that being said, you know, instead of our home being this perfect place with everything put away, it now is our home, and we live in our home. And our home is now an adaptive place for a wheelchair, and we have stuff piled in certain places so that Mark can, you know, access them and things like that. So yes, that pre to post, when you're given a second chance, you better take it from the positive. And as we say all the time, we're rolling forward with it.
I mean, maybe some of the messages, like, don't wait for your second chance. If this is something that sounds familiar to you, or you're behaving towards the loved ones in your life this way, to adjust it now in case there isn't a second chance. Everybody that I've spoken with that was essentially shot in the line of duty and were laying there and anticipated their death had so many regrets. Yep. So I'm trying to design my life, and I want to urge others to not have regrets. not an easy thing to do. And just so you know, Connor, I completely hear you. My father was the same exact way. It took me a long time to be friends with him again and to forgive him. He was a nightmare to grow up with. And, you know, I don't know why it went that way. I don't know why it had to be that way. When you get old enough to understand, which obviously you're old enough to understand, but to have compassion of why it was that way. And forgiveness is a big thing. So when you can make peace and forgive, I remember telling my mother, I said, you know, I have no relationship with my mother and for several reasons. But I said, you know, I do forgive him. And she went, for what? And I went, for what? Weren't you here? Did you forget where you were? I'm not sure it's about me, but I said, and if I didn't, I wouldn't talk to him, but I had to find forgiveness in order for us to have a relationship into my 20s. My father was a very difficult person. You know, it's so funny because recently I had somebody in my family tell me they thought it's because he was very Italian. And, you know, it's just the mindset of the stupidity behind a comment like that, where somebody had some obviously emotional issues, some kind of psychological thing going on, and to chalk it up to him being Italian. And my rebut to that was my grandmother, who was the best human being I've ever known in my life or ever met. For several reasons, not because everybody loves their grandma, right? But like mine actually was really special, right? She was just this non-judgmental, compassionate, giving, thoughtful, and very funny person without a bad bone in her body. I remember the first time I heard her curse, I was about 18 years old, almost had a heart attack. And I couldn't believe she said, and that in New Jersey, everybody curses, but she got frustrated with my aunt, her sister, and said, oh, bullshit. And I was like, whoa, holy shit, you must be serious about this one. But I know what it was like to grow up like that. And I know it's not an easy thing, dude. I just want you to know you're not the only one. And I'm happy that you're able to progress forward. And I say this not because you need to hear it, but maybe other people need to hear it. So forgiveness is a very powerful thing. So I'm glad to hear that you guys are progressing in a better relationship. And hopefully Mark, you know, really, really internalizes that. Mm-hmm. So,
well, and that was one thing at the conference I spoke at, you know, it was a bunch of, you know, it was all cops and some wives and stuff. Now's our thing is like, you know, like as a family, you know, it's something I've always grown up, you know, he was always in law enforcement since I was born. And so like, I've always understood, yeah, like, you know, that's, I think some people don't, you know, that aren't in law enforcement, they don't realize, you know, like they could be pulling you over, but they could have just came from a dead baby. Or, you know, like there's so much they see in a day. And so, you know, yeah, work is hard, but when you come home, you know, you kind of got to take that. You got to take that uniform off and leave everything there. Like, you know, we're not your prisoner that you're taking into the jail. Like, you know, we're your family. You know, don't take it out on us. We're here to like bring your spirits up and help you out. And so that was our big thing, like at the conference, is like, you know, we're your kids. We're not some prisoner in the back seat of your car, you know, like
you guys want love. Yeah. You know, yeah. you guys deserve and want love. And sometimes, listen, I have very young children, I told you guys before. I mean, I have days that are difficult and sometimes I'm exhausted and I go home and they'll be jumping on me and want to fight. The other night just happened. So my number three wanted to fight. I was so tired. I was jet lagged. I was like, oh man, I just want to go to bed. He's like, can we fight? And I was like, I just make these decisions. And I'm like, oh yeah, it's go time. And you know what, dude, even to take, I didn't want to do it. He would never know I didn't want to do it. It even happened last night. One who's was here before, you know, last night I was tired. I wanted to get to sleep. I wanted to be up today. My goal was to wake up at 4:50 in the morning. And it was like 9:44. And I was like, "Boo, we're there, man. I need 7 hours. Like I got to get to bed." And then, you know, he wanted to play. And so I ran around the house for 10 minutes. So sometimes it's not about us as dads. You have to really think about who they are as kids. And all they want to be is your children and play. They just want to love their dad. And if you don't allow them to love you, that's a real problem.
Well, and you know, your kids look up to you just like they look up to law enforcement. They look up to firefighters. They look up to you and you're their dad, but you're their dad. So you have to separate that whole, and even if it's a minute of fighting with them or a minute of playing Mario or whatever the newest game is, 1 minute can make a whole difference in their day. And that's one thing we've always kind of said. Mark was so boring. He never laughed. He never had fun. He was just always so serious.
You never saw him smile. Like, yeah, you could tell like the funniest joke and the whole room would be laughing and he just have a straight face and like,
he
had no sense of humor. Yeah. That was our joke. He's like, man, you're just dull. And so I think even after his accident, you know, I'm seeing him smile more and dad jokes. And so, I mean, in the whole wake of it all the bad, there's just been so much good and so much change as a family. We've come closer and I mean, there's been a lot more family stuff, like with health related things and a couple losses and stuff. But it's just brought us closer as a family and let us know, like, you know, our days are limited or counted. And so, you know, we got to spend them the best we can to make memories and, you know, enjoy what we can. And that, you know, like, yeah, life's hard. We're going to have bad days, but that's what the family's for. You know, we're here to rely and use each other to, you know, make each other have better days and, you know, talk to and all that stuff. And so I think, you know, while it sucked that he can't walk, it's almost a miracle that it happened because it saved us as a family. And, you know, it's brought our connections because, you know, if it didn't happen, you know, who knows where we'd be at today. You know, I could be going back and forth between houses throughout the week or weekdays, weekends. And, you know, I could have no connection or relationship with my dad. But, you know, I'm having a pretty good relationship with my dad now. You know, it's growing and, you know, we're doing things and you know, we're talking like, oh, hey, when you go on a sushi date or sushi bromance or whatever, you know, go get sushi together and stuff like that. And so we're trying, whereas before it was just kind of like you didn't want to be around him or hang out with him. And so, you know, like you said, you know, like, you know, you're fine even if it's 10 minutes, you know. Us as kids, you know, you see him struggling with work and so you don't want to ask for a lot, but you know, just a couple minutes goes a long ways.
I want to know about Mark's childhood, but two, did he ever say that he was sorry for making life feel the way that he did?
He's apologized to me multiple times about stuff. And even now, like when he messes up, he'll apologize. Whereas before he wouldn't even apologize or, you know, he would kind of apologize, but you could just tell it what he was. And, you know, like he was kind of more just saying it to like make it be better, but it wasn't truly meaningful. Whereas now if he'll mess up or, you know, some days he'll have rough days and he'll blow a gasket, nothing crazy, you know, he'll just, you know, have that little outburst, you know, he'll apologize and like, you know, hey, sorry, I'm having a rough day. You know, it's like, hey, you know, it's okay. Like,
listen, I got to give a lot of credit to your father. That's a very hard thing to do. Yeah. A man who could never do that before. So that's wonderful to hear. That's actually one of the things that my father could never do. He could, and he's still to this day, you know, unfortunately he's not doing well, health-wise, but, never would say I'm sorry. Never. And never meant it. If it was, I actually never heard my parents say I'm sorry to anybody. They just, they weren't those kind of people. They still aren't. And that's a big acknowledgement from your father. That's great. I'm curious about his childhood because there's got to be something that caused this. What was his childhood like?
He has an older brother, Kurt, who was a Springfield firefighter. He just retired. And then his little brother, Matt. There's 3 years between him and Kurt, and then his younger brother, there's 4 years. He is out in Boise, Idaho, and mom and dad married the whole time. His dad worked for GM, so he traveled a lot. They moved around the country a lot for different jobs, but
they were in Christian schools.
He grew up in Christian schools, but they were never around family, and because they moved all the time, you know, they didn't have connections, and without going into much detail, the relationship that we have with his parents has is pretty much gone, especially after his injury. And it had nothing to do with his injury. It has to do with some things that came out.
Sometimes you have to make peace with the fact that there are just some people in your family that you're not going to able or ever be able to be with anymore. And
exactly.
I have some of my family, you know, I'm a 41-year-old man and I have to come to terms with that. And some of it haunts me a little bit. I wish it wasn't this way. And I question myself about, oh, is it me? You know, but it's not, I know it's not me. And it's, right. and you know, I make a really good villain, by the way. So when you have some success, some notoriety, whatever it may be, however you want to quantify it, more than most people. And that's not a brag. That's just the truth.
It is.
You make make a good villain, right? So people think that, oh, well, he's doing well, he's this, and he's hitting it big and whatever it may be. And no, now he doesn't care about his family. The reality is it was just the opposite. A lot of people started getting very, I think, internally angry at me for not being one of them anymore, as wild as that sounds. And then I have some family members that are just so thankful and so proud and so happy, and they just love watching it and enjoying it and, you know, enjoying my children. And those are the people I'd rather be around. And, you know, you just can't spend a lot of time with trying to figure out why these people are so fucked up and why you're not.
Well, I spent 20 years trying to be a daughter to someone that never had a daughter. And for 20 years, it didn't matter what I did to make her happy. I still took a beating in some way, shape, or form. And as things progressed with Mark's situation and more things came out with her, then I confronted the situation with a 10-page document of all the things that she had done to me for the last 20 years. And I, in that, wrote, at this moment, I cannot forget what's happened. And your son is living a new life, and we're trying to learn a new life, and you're still bringing it back to you. And right now, I don't think I can forgive you.
He's a narcissist. So,
Yeah.
Well, love craves the, oh, I bet you that Mark's mother really, in some weird way, might have gotten a real rise out of people feeling bad for her.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hey guys, if you're enjoying the Street Cop podcast, do us a favor and give us a review on iTunes or Spotify, wherever you're listening to us. Tell a friend. We don't charge anything for the episodes. We appreciate your support. Check us out on any social platform by putting into the search bar Street Cop Training. Give us a follow. We have a lot of free content coming out every single day that you might not catch here on the podcast. And it's important for you to be able to do your job more professionally. And we also entertain you as well.
And so, you know, the last 2.5 years, especially, we have minimal contact.
Every holiday and Christmas, you're like, hey, happy Christmas.
They sent a text to the boys and said, we're moving out of state. Didn't even say where. They just were moving. And that day added 20 years to my life. It made me sad for my kids that they were going to never have a relationship with their grandparents. But my mom and dad were right here, and the kids have got so many adopted grandparents, not just in Republic, but across the nation, that have loved them and prayed over them and sent them support and ask about them. I mean, I have clients that ask about them every day. And so that's their
Seems case. Like they're doing pretty good. And listen, man, just so you know, like, that's, unfortunately, as fucked up as it sounds, that's life. Yes. And as you go through life, you're going to have friends now that you'll never be friends with again. Sometimes you have friends for 20 years, but your life shifts a little bit and they're not your friends anymore. Now, look, I have friends that will always be my brothers, but we don't spend any time together anymore. We're different people. But when the time comes, and times have come, I am there and I'm 100% there. It's just some of this stuff you see on social media as you progress through life, there's a lot of truth to it. I don't mean I'm talking, when you watch these speeches, I'm sure they come across your algorithm at times on Instagram or Facebook or whatever you're on, TikTok, and they're talking about, as you go through life, there are people that are going to be there for you, people that aren't, and some things change. A lot of that's actually true.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And it's actually a very interesting time in our world where you're getting insight from people who are experiencing things that are just like you. So you have an understanding of, like, okay, it's not just me.
Right.
You know? So that's, it's good.
One of the things at the Wounded Blue conference that we were at in October that Connor spoke at Kelly Loach, she asked the kids, what do you want to be when you grow up? And so there were four of them, and Connor went first. And what'd you say?
So I want to be a police officer.
And then she went on to the next girl, and she said that she would go into law enforcement. And so it went down the line that they all would go into law enforcement. Of course, now they've had other change of hearts.
Well, that'd be like some kind of form of law, not an officer, but something to do with law enforcement.
And so when it came down to, why would you choose this career, especially knowing that your dad was injured, your dad was killed, your dad was shot, you know, what did you guys say?
Just the family behind it and the support. No, I get, for me, like in Springfield, we're pretty pro law enforcement. So just seeing the support we had from people, from my dad, you know, even worldwide, like it was just, I mean, his face, you can't go anywhere in our hometown and not see his face on some, when you're going into the door. I mean, there's stuff everywhere. And just the people that still check in and send stuff to us, you know, it's just like people do care. And what drives, you know, that's what I think we need. And I hope, you know, people that, you know, are in law enforcement, I hope they see it and that keeps them driving. Cause I know it's not an easy job to do day in and day out, you know, especially not knowing if you'll come home, but just the support and like, you know, these are people that I've enjoyed being around these last 18 years. And they're people that I could be around more often, you know.
There's a true
family, you know, you might not always know they're there until you need them, and you know, you're there for them and they're there for you. And just, yeah, pour of love and support we had, it really meant a lot. And it showed a lot of it, you know, we truly bled black and blue.
And there are people that understand.
Yeah. It's not, you know, it's kind of like when, you know, people come home from deployments and stuff, you know, not everybody understands it. Whereas, you know, people that may have not been in our, you know, not every, you know, everybody's injury is different, but people understand in a way where you can talk to them or they can give you some kind of advice. It's just, there's people that are listening that can have an idea of what it's like and can, you know, support you in a better way than people that aren't in that kind of line of stuff.
Yeah. I mean, there's a big responsibility as law enforcement officers who are listening to this too, which make sure we're communicating to our children as they get older of, you know, the reality of our professions and letting them know that mommy or daddy does love you. And, you know, to never have to worry about them. And you could say it all you want, but your kids are always going to worry about you, probably more than your spouses. How's Chloe doing? Tell me about that.
She's good. Chloe, she turned to my sister for her emotions and her advice and her support. And my sister, she's married, doesn't have any kids. So my kids are like her kids too. But, you know, in the beginning, I had been going through cancer treatment myself. I was 6 months into my cancer treatment when Mark got injured. So we had that as a family that we were dealing with, and the emotions of that kind of thing. And then Mark's injury, Chloe, my sister lived out on the East Coast at the time. And so she took her and they went out there and stayed while we were in Colorado. So
we're on the East Coast. We're on the East Coast.
She was in South Carolina.
Okay.
So gotcha. That gave her a chance to, you know, kind of forget what was going on, but yet she's
able to live like if she was on vacation.
Yeah.
She didn't have to worry about dad. She was able to stay busy and have fun on the beach or mm-hmm. go to work with my aunt. She was able to still be a kid and not have to worry about all the adult type stuff. And she was kind of, I don't want to say protected from it, but she was kind of like shielded, where she wasn't thinking about it all the time and like where she was still in a healthy place.
Chloe's our emotional girl. She's kind of like her mom. She cries over everything. So it was important for us that we kept her life as normal as we could. Of course, she FaceTimed with us every day. She communicated, you know, she sent cards, you know, different things like that. Fast forward to today, and she does good. I mean, she's a 11-year-old girl now that's seen more of her dad than any 11-year-old girl would ever want to see or need to see. But that's just part of our life. You know, when you're dealing with somebody that's paraplegic and, you know, you have to help clean up accidents and things like that and just be able to help assist where he needs assistance. You know, she steps in and she does it. She doesn't complain.
And even then, you know, we shielded her from as much as we could, you know, like, I actually remember she was kind of mad or sad that she didn't feel like she was doing enough to help dad. And so we had to like kind of not, so we didn't set her down and talk to her, but you know, we talked to her like, you know, you don't need to be cleaning up his poop or, you know, like there's things that you don't need to be doing at this age. And so, you know, just making sure stuff's out of his way or, you know, just there was smaller kid type things that she could do. And that, you know, that, yes, I'm a kid, but I'm also 15. And so there's, you know, like, yeah, I'm going to be in charge of wiping his butt if he has an accident. And, you know, like there's just things that I can do that she shouldn't have to do. And so that was me for as a big brother is like, I want to shield her from having, you know, even at my age, I shouldn't have to see my dad's, you know, there's things I saw that I shouldn't have seen. That, you know, that's part of it. That's what you do for family. That's what you do for people you love. You know, I had to help him out quite a bit when he first got home because it was so new and he was still trying to figure out how to do things. And so she felt back to she wanted to help. And so we was trying to find things that she could help with. And so now that things are more normal and that, you know, he's getting in a daily life, you know, we're kind of more back in our normal life set. And so, you know, she can still help him. But the things that he has to do now for helping him are way different than like they're nothing compared to what we had to do when he first came home.
Heather, I thought you were done, Connor. I'm sorry. My bad.
You're good. You're good.
All right. My bad, dude. Don't come over here and beat the shit out of me.
You look bigger than I do, so.
I don't know, bro. It's hard to tell. I have to imagine being a mom, having your 9-year-old daughter away from you for 3 months must have been brutal emotionally. And I think you did a great job. Where did you find the strength to be able to cope with maybe even suppressing some of that to be strong enough for your whole family? Because it's clear that you are the rock in this situation, dealing with a cancer treatment, dealing with a diagnosis. How did you dig so deep? Tell me about that.
You know, as I tell people, I'm not OCD, but I am a type A person. I'm a planner and a prepper, and I always prepare for the worst, hope for the best. You know, we have our faith too, but I am just a get her done person. And there's no time to sit and pout about it. There's no time to sit and whine about it. We're going to take what we've got and we're going to go forward with what we have. And there's no time to sit and just cry and be a big baby. Now, did that happen? Yes. There were times that I went back to my room out there at Colorado and was like, oh my gosh, how are we going to get through the next day? How are we going to get through the next weeks, the months, you know, the years to come? But there was nothing at that point that I didn't see that we couldn't accomplish in some way, shape, or form. We had people from local to across the nation, across the world that were reaching out, offering any assistance, advice.
I mean, it was little things like she found an Andes in Colorado, and that's something that we thought was only here. And she posted about it, and some guy sent us like $100 or so in Andes gift cards. Like, people were wanting to help so much. When we post, like we talked about filming things, people send us a GoPro. Like, it was just things like that. And that's how people help. So I think the outpour, love, and support that, like, you know, the people that do support us, like, I mean, we weren't even asking for that stuff, but it's something that we mentioned, like, oh yeah, it'd be kind of like, you know, just the small things like Andy's custard, you know, like just the amount of money they spent and sent us gift cards like that. That I think helped drove us to keep going. And like, we have support, we have people that care and are here to help us, you know, like, we can do this.
Well, and I journaled on Facebook that our Prayers for Preeti page. And, you know, I was not asking for anything, but I was going to a store one day and there was an Andy's frozen custard. Like, that's only in Missouri. They're becoming more worldwide or nationwide, but to be in Colorado and there's something from home right there, it just made me excited and to be able to go get my snow monster custard.
The story is a little crazy too, because after this, then Mark has liver failure. Is it liver? Kidney failure.
Kidney. I was going to touch on that too. Yep.
Yeah. Let's go right into that. So he has kidney failure, and people, I think everybody needs to strap in a little bit, cause this is a pretty fucking wild portion of the story.
Definitely a fucking wild. This is one of those things that you truly cannot make up this story. Mark had what was called IgA nephropathy, and it's where the kidneys don't filter the protein from animal fat like they're supposed to. Something he was diagnosed with the year that Connor was born in 2004. Up to 2020, he had been what they call smoldering. So his numbers weren't getting worse, but they weren't getting better. It's something you deal with for life. You take a blood pressure medication, watch what you eat, you'll do fine. Never at any time were we told, hey, you're going to need dialysis. They did say, if you don't follow the rules here. You could need a transplant one day, but that's years down the road. Fast forward to 2021. He in March or in January had his labs done. There was some questionable lab work there. Went back in March, had him done again. His creatinine had dropped. And then fast forward to July of 2021, he was having a lot of symptoms, a lot of swelling, just things weren't going well. And so around July 4th, 2021, he ended up in the hospital with kidney failure and immediately port place, dialysis, and you're going to need a transplant. So when I say it went into high speed motion, it just happened so fast. So fast forward we start dialysis or navigating that. Don't wish that on anyone. For those that are going through it, it sucks. So we get a call. Of course, we follow all of the stories on officers that are injured.
So we were going to try to find a lot.
Give her a chance, Connor. Jesus Christ.
I thought you were going to the good part right away. I was like, no.
So we hit into September. We had first applied at Barnes Jewish Hospital in St. Louis as a place of contact for kidney transplant, but never heard from him. Flipped over to SLU Hospital or St. Mary's up in St. Louis and got a call immediately. Got started with them and they tell us that they're going to list him for transplant. And they have a new program. So instead of having to fill out like paperwork, you go online, put your information in, and then that's how it starts matching you with, with people that could potentially be a kidney donor. Kidney donor, you can be a live donor. It does not have to come from somebody that's deceased. So you could potentially be a donor to someone that needs a kidney. So we were excited about this opportunity for a live donor and that someone across the nation would be a donor for Mark.
Can you just give me the website for that? Because I'm going to sign up for it right after this. I'm already on the Be the Match thing. Is that what that? So I'm on Be the Match for, I think, bone marrow and stuff like that. Uh-huh. I'm going to sign up for the live donor thing. What's the website? What's the name of the organization?
Oh my gosh. Give me just a minute and I'll pull it up here.
I'll tell the story.
The story. You look it up.
Look up.
Go to SLU Hospital. So anyway, we start out with a live donor and brand new program. Mark was the first one that had people signing up to be a live donor. We crashed the system. We put it on our Approach for Preview page and they had over 1,000 people in a short span sign up to see if they were a match for Mark. And the crazy thing about kidney donation is it's blood type, but there's other things that play into it. And of course, we are getting messages from friends saying, I'm not a match. It's telling me I need to lose 5 pounds. I'm not a match. It's telling me I need to lose 2 pounds. So goes on. Well, then we find out that we crashed the system. Good problem to have. So we start the live donor process and we get a call one morning from an officer at Springfield who got a call from an officer in Independence, Missouri that he used to work with and said, hey, does Preview still need a kidney? And he's like, well, let me call him. So he calls and Mark said, yeah. He goes, as a matter of fact, I'm just getting listed. We're in this process. And he said, okay. So he called back up to his friend in Independence. And we were told that there had been an officer, Blaze Madrid Evans, who had been shot the day prior. And that they were looking to do a direct donation. Unfortunately, Blaze was killed in the line of duty and the situation definitely was weighing heavy on everyone. And so that afternoon, we made a phone call to Mark's rep at SLU about someone else that had a question. And she said, we were talking about you. Were your ears burning? And Mark said, no. And she said, we have a possible direct donation. We're waiting to see if you're a match. And of course, we knew the story. So she said, stay by your phone. Don't leave your phone. And so we did. He did. He stayed with his phone all day. And that night we went to bed and we just figured he wasn't a match and we didn't hear anything. So at 12:16 in the morning, 12:12 maybe, the phone rings and it was our rep from SLU. And she said, you are a match. And we need you to be here at 7:00. And we're about 4 hours from St. Louis. And she went through all the questions that they had. Because of the situation and because of the direct donation, we knew Blaze was 21 years old. He was on FTO with the Independence Police Department. He was still on FTO. They got a call about a man that was in a home that had a warrant. They went to the house, went into the garage. There were a couple officers with him, and the guy pulled a gun and shot and killed him. The fellow officers were able to get him into a car and get him to the hospital where they did what they could. They were able to keep him alive long enough to, I say alive, but keep his body, going to where organ donation was an option because he was an organ donor. So Mark was the recipient of one of his kidneys. Talk about guilt, something that I've struggled with. How can you be happy when you have another family, especially a thin blue line family that's grieving the loss of their son, a fiance, the emotions that went into all of that, why we were so thankful to get a kidney. It's not how we had set out for a kidney, but by getting a kidney from a fellow officer that was starting his career at the same age Mark was, 21, and just getting his life started. Mark accepted that kidney. It was a perfect match. It was a beautiful kidney. The doctors have raved about it the last year. And the fact that this kidney is something that Mark could carry and honor and continue to honor Blaze in a way that he could means a lot.
Wow.
It's unbelievable.
Are you in contact with his family?
Of course. We met both of his moms and just the connection that we've been able to have with them. And I'm honest with them. I told them, I said, it's so hard for me not to have guilt. And I'm not even the recipient of it. But when I know you all are sad and, Blaze, I could have been his mom. I'm in my late 40s and he could have been my son. But we have Blaze. He hangs on our refrigerator. He's in our living room. He's at Mark's new desk at work. There's not a day that goes by that we don't think about him, that we don't think about his mom. And the fact that she went through with the direct donation, to Mark and, both of his moms we've had connections with, and it's just, it leaves me speechless a lot of times.
Have they tried to offer you comfort?
Oh yeah. I mean, they're amazing.
They've told us, they've seen all the good it's done for him donating. And so I think it's, obviously it's still hard because they've lost our son, but they've seen so much good out of it. And so, that kind of helps them, put peace of mind about it. And so, when they do see us, they see the life that he still is. How much of a hero he was and how he continues to live on. And I think he said, they donated, 74. They donated as much as they could. And so, just all the people he's helped, he's still out there. you know, this, they've talked about all the signs and things that they've seen from him, and that all the things that, you know, while they've lost their son, that, you know, they feel like, you know, they feel like family, like we've been family forever, just through the last year that we've gotten to know them and stuff. So
I text him. I'm kind of slacked off the last couple of months just because of so much in our own personal lives, but I do my best to try and send a text a couple of times a month, just checking in on him, you know, just know we're here. We love you guys. And we get the exact same response from them. If they're ever down this way, they always, you know, stop and see us, or we grab lunch, or, you know, something along that line. You know, us traveling is a lot harder than what it used to be, just because of Mark's situation with this chair and all the medical supplies. So for us to go stay the night somewhere is a bit of a challenge, but we're always thankful when they're in the area and they holler at us and we can hug on their necks and just remind them how much we love them.
So Mark essentially gets this kidney, gets a clean bill of health, and then returns to work.
So he has not, as a matter of fact, January 12th, he is officially retired from the Springfield Police Department. There was a ordinance that the city had that, knock on wood, we didn't have to fight. The pension board took care of that, and they got it dissolved in December. So he was able to retire this last Thursday, with a duty disability pension. He's on the old pension system that they had through the city. And then he starts tomorrow at our local school as a school
security specialist.
School security specialist is his new title. So he'll kind of be behind the scenes doing ops plans, training.
Talking to classes.
Yeah, the little kids.
He's kind of taking jobs off the other SROs so they can focus on the kids, you know, security at the school and stuff. So
kind of spirits is your husband in now. Yeah.
Good. He's nervous about tomorrow. Tomorrow's a big day.
He told me, you know, he's been an officer for the last 21, you know, he's not known anything different. And so he's having to work with different types of computers and stuff. So I had this a day with him. Here's how you split screen. Here's how you, you know, do this and that. And so he's, you know, he's the first day, you know, nervousness, but I think he's excited to get out. You know, he hasn't done anything for 2 years. And so like his memory's gone down. And so he's excited to get out and finally get into a routine and do stuff and be able to use his brain.
What was the motivation to come on the podcast today? What's motivating you guys to do the work that you're doing now?
For me, even like at my conference, it's just, I think, raising awareness for people, like, you know, law enforcement, like, you guys aren't alone, especially for the kids side of it. Like, you know, for me, like, you first, like, oh man, I'm the only one that's been through this. But, you know, obviously there's officers injured all the time, way more than they should be, you know, all across the state and world. And so that, you know, you're not alone. There's people that have gone through similar things. And that, you know, there is a family, thin blue line family behind you that are here to help and support you. So, you know, our goal as a foundation is to help and support other people that need it, and let them know that they're not alone, and that, you know, if they need something, you know, we're more than happy to do what we can to help them.
What we learned is, we had outstanding support within our city, our state, you know, I just can't. I mean, I saved every single card, every text message, every email, every private message that we've had. And even Saturday, we were at dinner in Springfield and somebody bought our dinner. It's not uncommon for that to happen. And they left a little note that said, you know, from one law enforcement family to another. In going through this process, Kansas City and St. Louis both have programs for officers that are seriously injured in the line of duty. But here in Southwest Missouri, we are lacking that, huge, huge lacking of that. So we started our Pretty Strong Foundation in 2021 in hopes that we can help families and officers that are, and first responders that are seriously injured in the line of duty. And it could be from giving a financial donation to them, It may be that they need help with a chair, you know, a lift chair, something like that, something simple that work comp doesn't cover, all the way to just guidance on therapy that, you know, people that we know that'll do counseling with someone or therapy for families, things like that. So for us,
it's our way of giving back,
and sharing. I mean, even we have people that contact us that their husband or son or whoever is had an injury and now they've got a spinal cord injury and they're paralyzed from the waist down. Where do we start? So,
one, like for me at the conference, I had a mom come up to me and she's like, how did you handle having to take on all the jobs that your responsibilities your dad had? And so just being able to share like my side, like that, just for me to know I could be helping other kids that are going through something similar like I did and being able to make it easier on them. That's my way of giving back. And I love helping people. And so being able to do that means a lot to me. And she, you know, it's whatever I can do to make things easier on other people, especially kids. Because, I mean, it's life-changing, and it changes a lot as a kid going through something like this. And so just being able to, you know, where they can be able to better help them and then where they can help their parents through it. And now, like, you know, it's a family thing. It's not just one person needing to do it all. And so that was a big drive for me.
Where can people find you guys?
Where can they find us?
Like Prayers
for Preby. We have our Prayers for Preby on Facebook. And then we have PrebyStrongFoundation.com.
And you guys spell Preby for everybody?
Yes, it's P-R-I-E, B as in boy, E. And we're an open book. We tell people all the time, if you see us, don't ignore us. You can stop and ask us a question. We are glad to answer. Reach out to us. Every day we have messages on our Prayers for Preby page that people send from, you know, how do you find this or how'd you do this? How are you navigating that?
Well, and one thing we're looking, you know, it's just not just a law enforcement thing, it's also kidney, handicap stuff. So like when you park in a parking lot and there's some dick that's parked in the lines that you're not supposed to park in, like that happened the other day. And so just trying to bring awareness to, you know, kidney donation, wheelchair accessibility. You know, what's the difference between like a handicap room and like an actual like, wheelchair accessible. Like there's just so much difference that, you know, we never really knew anyone in a wheelchair. And so like now that we have that, it's opened our eyes up to like, you know, once you notice or our eyes are open to it, you notice it a lot more. And just, you know, all the small things that, you know, if my dad was by himself, he couldn't get out because there's some motorcycle parked in the striped lines that they're not supposed to be parked in and all that type of stuff.
And our connection with the Street Survivor group has just been outstanding. I know Mark has enjoyed, you know, hearing other stories and getting to connect with them. We've done some post-critical peer support. We're headed up to Jeff City at the end of the month to do a 4-day class. And just that people know you're not alone. And it doesn't matter where it's at, you know, if there's a drinking problem, if there's that, you know, we have connections and we have places to encourage people to try to think, you know, hey, try this, try that, go here, go there. And the support for kids is so needed. So needed.
Are you guys going to get an opportunity or is it really, really difficult? But I don't know if Mark's aware that we invited everybody from the Street Cop Survivors Club to the conference on us. That includes you guys as well, if you'd like to come in Nashville, Tennessee. I know it's probably difficult. How far is Nashville from you guys?
It's about 5 hours, not too far.
I mean, if you want to come, we'll have a room for you guys as well. Yeah. We'll get you all set up. That's up to you. That's my offer to you guys for for doing the work that you're doing. The Street Cop Survivors Group is getting a booth from us. Mm-hmm. They're going to get donations from us to raffle stuff off to continue to try to support law enforcement officers who were injured significantly in the line of duty. Still trying to work a lot of that stuff out. When we created that group, I was like, look, I have so much on my plate. I can give you guys more of a consulting and some advice. But if you could make that event, I'd love to see you guys. That'd be awesome.
That would be amazing. I also want to throw out there too, the Gary Sinise Foundation. I don't know if you're familiar with that, but the support that he gives to law enforcement and first responders and veterans, The law enforcement and first responder side of it for them is fairly new. But his program is outstanding. And just like you, if we can just be half of what like you guys are and what his group is one day, I my heart is just there. But the Gary Sinise Foundation is building us a new home.
Wow.
Yes.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
It's all one level. I mean, it's they're going to be their new forever home where he can get what he needs to get all by himself. It's a house he can operate in from a wheelchair.
Yeah, Mark's story is on the Gary Sinise Foundation page, but
our website has it on.
Yeah, they've started it. We're waiting on concrete to get poured. As soon as concrete gets poured, then, you know, it'll move pretty quick. But our move-in date right now is set for the end of September, 1st of October. But it's right here in Republic. And we are so thankful and we are so excited. The Gary Sinise Foundation also got Mark an iBot, which is it's a power wheelchair that will climb stairs and it goes up on two wheels. It's kind of like the so he can, you know, he can be at a football game and be the same height as everyone else and be able to communicate and talk, but yet climb curbs, go upstairs, those kind of things. And without them, that's a piece of equipment that we would never even have had the opportunity to get. So
it's amazing. Gary Sinise is one hell of a dude.
Yeah. Yeah. It's amazing. And we have his book. We went to his gala in Nashville. They invited us down there to that back in October, and we got his autobiography, and I just got to put my effort into reading it. I can't seem to stay awake when I start reading a book right now, but we just heard this week that his autobiography is one that you'll never forget.
It's awesome. Well, I think we've covered quite a bit. I hope you guys can make it. And, you know, you have the full support from us. Anything from us, you know, I'll have Frankie text you my cell phone number. Anything you need from us, you have us. Anything you want to promote on our stuff, send it over. We'll promote it for you. It's a wonderful, wonderful cause. And for me,
work out meal plan.
What'd you say?
I'll take your workout and meal plan.
Yeah. I mean, I've been working. Well, thanks, man. I appreciate you noticing that I'm I do exercise a little bit. But I actually injured my arm in a side-by-side rollover. So I've been able to work out for about 2.5 weeks now.
Oh, no.
So it's actually clearing up, but I pinned my arm under the roll cage of a side-by-side. And I thought I broke it. My friend last night had to stop at his house and give his kids their Christmas gifts because we were meeting for. He's like, dude, I still can't believe you didn't break it. I just can't. I'm still in. Everybody who saw it, I knew the girl was the nurse at the hospital. She's like, I still can't believe that arm wasn't broken. It's a shock to me. But anyway, you know, anything that we can do to help you guys, I try to play this balance of, if I can do more on our end on the business side, I'll be able to help more on the end of the foundational side and donating. So, you know, I think I try to do my part by creating a bigger brand of street cop training to direct more attention and resources to things like this, which really tickle my fancy quite a bit. That really, you know, I mean, when you said there's a place to donate live kidneys, I'm like, I can't wait to get off this podcast and go sign up. Literally the first thing I'm going to do.
Yeah.
I secretly hope somebody become a match on Be the Match and somebody matches me on their marrow. I don't even have to meet somebody. Just the thought for me that I get to help somebody like that. It's right. You have no idea what that does for me. So I'm really excited to work with you guys, you know?
And that's what was so exciting about the live donation side for us is that we, even though Mark's situation changed, we still hope that there were people out there that were willing to give a kidney to someone else. And we did hear about a story down in, was it Mountain Grove, Missouri? So Southeast Missouri, where somebody gave, she was a pharmacist that donated to one of her patients that came into the pharmacy. So
you give somebody a life, you know, giving somebody their life back.
Heck yeah.
What more could you ask for? But sounds like things are doing pretty good for the Preebies, and you guys are doing fucking phenomenal. So proud of you. It's so amazing to be able to sit down. I know that Abby Overton, Josiah's wife, put us together. It was what a blessing. We have some people who come on this show that are celebrities and have some major create, but then you'd be surprised, like things like this end up being some of the most impactful stuff that we get into in what we do here. So I just can't thank you guys enough for being so transparent and so open to come in and share your story with all of us.
And I'm going to turn the camera real quick to Mark. So you can say hi.
Oh, he's right there. Mark.
Hey, man.
Have you been there the whole time?
No, I was doing some chores and stuff out in our rooms.
Well, this was a pleasant surprise. I was actually hoping that you would be here. It's a real pleasure to meet you, man.
Yeah, you too, man. Thanks for doing this.
He came rolling in, so I said, get over here so we can show you off.
Yeah.
I think we should do another episode with you if you want to do that one day.
Yeah. Just let us know. We'll do it.
I know you got some mobility issues, but you know, I invited your wife and your son and the whole family to come to Nashville. I don't know if you saw it in the group. So we'll set you guys up. Let me know what worked for you there and we'll get that repeated for you again. But we'd love to have all of you come and obviously enjoy the show. I don't know if you saw what the conference looks like. We have some killer speakers there and it'll be a cool event, man. And a lot of the guys from the group are supposed to be coming because I invited everybody.
Right.
Yeah. Did you see that post where I invited everybody from the group?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm not looking for accolades. I just want to make sure that people are seeing it. And
no,
it's not
I saw
being,
it. I saw it.
Yeah. So I'd love to have you there. I'd love to meet you. So it's awesome. Hey, listen, man, thank you for everything. I know it's been a long journey, but I think you guys are doing a fucking hell of a job. And I'm proud of all of you. It's really awesome, dude. So keep it up. And I'm so thankful that you got a second shot at this life thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's weird how some of these things become oddly, in weird ways, blessings in disguise there. You get to serve other people and you guys are doing one hell of a job. Really, really proud of all of you.
Thank you, man. We appreciate it.
We send in my cell phone number to everybody to have. So if you guys need anything from me and anything Street Cop can do to support you guys and the foundation we're in. But if you're not going to make it to Nashville, you got to tell me because I want to send you guys a bunch of Street Cop shit in the mail. But if you're going to make it there, just come get it when you get there so you can pick and choose what you want.
Okay, cool. Yeah, that sounds good. We'll figure it out.
And I'll send you the organ donor stuff too.
That's excellent. Yeah, thank you. I appreciate it so much. Guys, you know, continue to do what you're doing. It was a wonderful day for me. Getting to meet you and I'm thankful. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I'll see you guys.
We'll see you.
Bye everybody. We'll see you soon. Bye-bye. Guys, if you're in an area where you're trying to get to our classes, but we're not close to you, fret not. We actually have on-demand training at streetcop.com. You can take that course online right now and then you could attend that training in the future at no additional cost. You can redeem your voucher. So you get two for the price of one. We don't want to deny you the ability to take this training now, especially knowing that it can keep you safe at a very minimum, putting bad guys in jail where they belong, and at the maximum, going home to your family. Check out streetcop.com for that offer.